With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem-solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Hello, welcome to Be a Terrier. Stephen Chicken here, joined in this new era for the podcast. Obviously, a lot has changed. David Hartrick still beside me. Just look at all these changes, Dave.
Yeah, but there are two constants, aren't there? There are two things that will never change, and that's me and you at the forefront of the podcast revolution, talking about Huddersfield Town.
Yeah, I've been away for a couple of weeks. A lot has happened while I've been away, and a lot has happened in the week since I've been back. So apologies that we've not had a chance to do a terribly timely podcast reacting to everything, but it's as well we did, because we've now got the fixtures, we've now had confirmation of the takeover is happening. We'll start, though, with Neil Warnock, who is staying on as manager. I think he was quite insistent last season that he wouldn't be staying on as manager. And lo and behold, he's coming back in for another year. I know, obviously, the fans are extremely, they're delighted by it. And you would be. I think the club couldn't not offer it to Neil Warnock after the end of the last season. They had the best ever finish to a championship season, to a second-tier season, since 3 points for a win was introduced in 1982. 21 points, I think it was, in the final 10 games of the season, which is remarkable for a team that was bottom of the table going into those final 10 games. There was a massive upturn in form last year, but I know that you have some misgivings, Dave, so we'll start there. What's your thoughts on it?
I think we're both of the same view, so we may as well get this out of the way first. I think it's worth saying we both know that Huddersfield Town had to ask the question, didn't they? And if Neil Warnock said yes, they had to say yes themselves, didn't they? Completely understand that, completely get it, have no issue with it on that front. It's just more, I get buying themselves a season, which is what it feels like to me. You know, buy yourself a season while you sort various things out. New owner. We know there's various wrangles around the stadium that need sorting. The squad needs looking at. Various other things. But it's a very different situation. Neil Warnock coming in and managing from the off. You know, he did a superb job. We said on the live super pod that we did with Andy Takes That Chance down at Magic Rock. You know, one of the things we praised him for, I think me and you both said it, I think Matt Glennon completely agreed, was that one of the things Warnock had done is just managed from game to game. You know, he'd in that situation with a limited number, he'd just made it all about the match day and gone from game to game. Can't really do that when you're there from the off. You know, it's a very different thing. And it just feels to me like, as I said, it's not coming from a place of, you know, I would never have done it. Town had to ask the question, and if he said yes, they had to get him in. But I just think they need to start thinking about where they go from here. You know, we praised Warnock for his tactics at times, and I think he's no way is he the tactical dinosaur some people make him out. But at the same time, Burnley didn't go up last season because they wanted it more. Sheffield United didn't go up because they, you know, died to win a corner. It's those things and that effort are important, and I know they're things a crowd appreciates. But I just think that league is going to be very competitive next season. No, competitive is not me saying it, you know, the quality is going to be really good. I just think it's going to be very competitive. I don't think there's many mugs in that league. Ipswich and Plymouth, who've come up, are very good attacking units and very well coached off the ball. They're going to make it difficult for several sides next season. Sheffield Wednesday coming up in the manner they did, They've got rid of Darren Moore. It feels like they're going to employ somebody either completely stupid or extremely sensible. We shall see. But it feels like they're going to have a run at staying up, so it's going to be a difficult league. And I just what I don't want is another season of sort of standing still, really. And we know there's things to sort, and we know, you know, Neil Warnock comes with kind of a guarantee of you're not going to be in that bottom three battle for the longer term, we hope. But at the same time, it's what do they do next summer if they have one more year of Warnock? But I keep coming back to the same thing. Completely understand it. Had to ask if he gets permission from his missus to be able to do it, which is, we know how it works, then yeah, they had to go and do something. But I just, my whole thing is, you know, the working class club thing and all of this sort of thing. I want them to be ambitious. You know, I want them to really push themselves forward, and I want them to kind of embrace that change. And I don't feel or have seen anything that makes me think that's going to happen this summer. But what's your take on it, Steve?
I think everyone knows I get on very well with Neil Warnock and had nothing but good things to say about the job he did last season. I think I would have, in an ideal world, would have liked to have seen the club, I think, under the new regime, make an immediate sort of, they're trying to push that this is a new era. But I'm not sure that having a manager who was there last season, who you know is going to retire or leave the club next summer, unless you can tempt him for another year. But he's you know, Neil Warnock is not going to be there in 10 years' time, I think we can pretty safely say. No manager. But then you could also say, well, what manager is? You know, they tried to do the forward planning with Danny Schofield, and that didn't work. They tried to do the forward planning, young up and coming, Mark Fotheringham, and that didn't work. And I know that was a point that Neil Warnock was very keen to make himself. So it's less about Warnock for me. I'm absolutely fine with Neil Warnock being manager. It just felt like that first press conference, and I appreciate that Kevin Nagel hadn't taken the club over yet. We're going to speak to Kevin Nagel on Tuesday at a press conference, so this could all change. But there was a lot of, are you going to replace Lee Bromby? Well, we'll need to wait and see. Are you going to, what's going to happen with the stadium? We're going to have to wait and see. I think it depends how much that is them being coy, and they actually do have plans, and they just need a safe pair of hands to get them through the first year where they start putting those plans into place. And how much of it is actually we don't particularly have a plan here, and Neil Warnock is our plan for the time being. And I think those are two very different scenarios. So we'll see. I think they were probably quite intentionally playing things down. I think it's very easy as a new regime and very tempting to come in and go, everything's going to be brilliant from here on in. And so I think the decision not to do that feels quite conscious to me. But we'll see. I mean, I sort of learnt with Warnock that conventional wisdom can go out the window a little bit as well. So, yeah, genuinely, we'll need to see how the results go and how the rest of the summer unfolds, I think, because we're recording this less than 48 hours after Kevin Nagel has taken over the club. We've not even spoken to him yet. And even if we were judging him on words, I think that only goes so far. We need to judge him on actions. We don't even have a first signing yet.
No.
Let alone any sort of clarity on the stadium or, you know, or anything like that longer term. So wait and see.
The one thing I would say, just picking up on something you said, is, like, we will have a little talk about Lee Bromby and his sort of legacy, because it's something me and you have differing views on to some of the fan base, shall we say. But I don't think you employ Neil Warnock and employ a director of football or a technical director, because,
yeah,
let's be honest, Neil Warnock is not going to listen to them if they say something he doesn't want to hear. If he's not willing to listen to his physios, he's not willing to listen to a director of football. So I would imagine that's probably something for the future, maybe, to look at after Warnock.
Yeah. One thing I do question, And it's difficult to say this without doing down the man who's replaced him, but I thought it was a real shame to see Clem leave the club, and it was quite clear from Warnock's press conference that that was a decision Neil Warnock had made. You and I, you know, we're not footballers, we're not on that training pitch, but I know that Clem's reputation across Europe was extremely high, and that he could have left town to you know, he would have had other offers to leave town and go to Premier League clubs, and he's always stuck by him. He's had, I don't think he had too much intention of leaving the club anytime in the near future either. And you know, nothing against Ian Bennett. Ian Bennett might turn out to be just as good a coach, if not better. Warnock has worked with him, and who are we to question Neil Warnock's methods? But I do hope that wasn't a short-sighted move to get rid of a coach of Clem's calibre and reputation to bring in Ian Bennett just because he's someone that Warnock knows already.
Yeah, I could not agree more with you. You know, I'm fortunate enough to know a few people at other clubs, and Clem is someone who sort of everyone is aware of. You know, I genuinely think, hand on heart, he probably walks into most clubs in this land with open arms as a goalkeeping coach. And the one thing we know about him, sort of anecdotally and personally once or twice, is he can be quite outspoken. And I hope that it's not a case of Neil Warnock doesn't want any dissenting voices, because I think dissenting voices in football clubs can be actually quite a healthy situation. But yeah, it is disappointing, and I'm sure he's had offers that he has not taken, or, you know, just refused outright to even entertain to stay at Huddersfield Town. So yeah, it was disappointing. It was disappointing. And it was also, I don't think anyone was expecting it. I don't think it was on the cards. I certainly don't think the sort of, you know, the rumour and the gossip was that he was going as well. It feels like it was quite a sudden thing. So I'm with you on that. I'm quite disappointed. But I'm interested in your read on Lee Bromby's exit, which we both know was inevitable. And yeah, we both know had been in the post for a long time. But what's your sort of view on his legacy?
I think it's a complicated one. I think his record on transfers it's not absolutely stellar, but I think it's very defensible. I think there are some obvious duds in there. Rolando Ahrens and Conor Mahoney sort of stand out. There's some loans that didn't work out, like Luke Mbete, Mipo Debeco. But then he's also brought in, I think we'll credit Clem with Lee Nichols, but he's also brought in Matty Pearson and Tom Lees and Michal Helic and Silver Thomas, all players that have arrived under his watch. Danny Ward as well. Jack Redoni, I think, is pretty unequivocal. I think, obviously, managerially, it's a mixed record, and I think, ultimately, that's what has done him most harm, because he was the one who brought Carlos Corbrand to the club, which, massive thumbs up for that. Mm-hmm. He was also the one who brought Mark Fotheringham to the club, which I think is
massive thumbs down.
Yeah, you can't defend that, unfortunately. The timing of it. If he'd brought Fotheringham in the summer and he hadn't worked out, and then they'd had to replace him with Warnock, then fine. But it's the fact that they'd already had that awful start to the season, and then they took another gamble. I think is, yeah, you can't defend that. But I think part of the legacy, and I wrote this earlier in the week, but part of his legacy, we're going to have to see, because that group of academy players that is coming through now, that I think we've been told for years, this academy group is really special, they're going to be really good. And I think they've been banking for a while on this group is going to come good, and it's starting to feel like this might actually be the year that happens, because we've seen a few of them have actually come and performed well under Warnock. But likes of Biloka Pitch, Edmunds Green, Luke Aina, who's coming through, Etienne Kamara, Brody Spencer, Jaheim Headley, Ben Jackson, have I mentioned Brahima Diarra already, Aaron Rowe, Kean Harrop, Kieran Phillips. They're all players that were either managed by Bromby when he was academy manager, or they were signed by him, or both. And I think, bear in mind that Town did that massive overhaul to the entire structure of their academy while Bromby was there and managing the academy. And I've not even mentioned Lewis O'Brien, by the way, another player who's come through under Bromby's watch, and then sold for multi-millions. That's where his legacy will be, I think. And I think if that group turns out to be as good as everyone hopes they are, or even half of them do, or two or three, four of them do, and they've already got one in O'Brien, then I think that's where you'll look back more favourably on Lee Bromby, I think.
I think there's a lot of... I think what Lee has suffered with is that when they got to the playoff final, bringing Corbyn in, that squad that he'd helped put together, the players that had come through, I think the issue is that then we come into last season and suddenly he became, in a lot of fans' minds, responsible for absolutely none of that, but definitely responsible for all the bad decisions. Yeah. And I think that's completely the wrong way to look at it, okay? And I think, you know, Fotheringham was a bad decision. I think Schofield was... he wasn't ready, but I think that decision was made in pure panic. You know, you have to remember it was, what, a fortnight out from the season starting? And it was...
wasn't far off, yeah. It was the first day of pre-season, for certain.
It was just crazy, you know. It was just a mad scramble. So my personal read on it is I think Lee did a really, really good job at that club overall. I think a lot of the bad decisions that were made, it is remarkable how many people have sort of completely distanced themselves from the bad decisions that were made, but are more than happy to say they had a little bit of input into all the good decisions. It's remarkable that, Steve, isn't it? But I think overall, I think Lee did a good job there. The problem is his mistakes were always the highest profile one. Okay, you know, yeah. Mark Fotheringham was unforgivable. He wasn't. Fotheringham, we defended for quite a while because we could see what he was trying to get to, but then he got there and we were like, okay, right, he's got his step one of the plan, and there was nothing else. There was absolutely nothing that followed behind it. So the thing is with Fotheringham, there was an issue there, so we completely get that. And there have been some duds, you know, Loughton, etc. But again, me and you do not know how much signing an ex-Burnley player was Lee Bromby's fault. So yeah, I think it's a complicated legacy, but I think he was a positive influence in that club overall. I think he's left some lasting change that will stay there. As you said, there's a crop of players coming through who he has directly had a hand in bringing to the club or nurturing or bringing through into the first team squad. But it's also completely understandable that when you make high profile mistakes, you're obviously going to be in the firing line. And again, that idea of having Lee Bromby even remotely trying to tell Neil Warnock what to do or who he's going to get in the transfer market, that's just not how 74-year-old Neil Warnock is going to operate at this stage in his career, is it?
He's not going to have a lad who he sat in the corner while he was delivering one of his bollockins telling him what to do, is he?
No.
I think the other sort of mistake, if you want to call it that, and part of it was budgetary. I think people think of the players that they missed out on, and that is all of them are down to money. Your likes of your Fleming and your Adebayo. I think going into 2020-21, Carlos's first season, there was too much faith put in that academy group to be the backup. They should have expected that they were going to have more injuries than usual. And I know that a lot of it was a budgetary restraint because they just didn't have the money to bring in players. And they got the benefit of that the following year when every other club in the division was suddenly like, oh, we need to trim our budget. Town had already done it. And they still had players on the wage bill. Let's not forget who were likes of Mbenza and Diakabi and Pritchard, who were eating up considerable wages, who they just had to see the contracts out. But I think they did put a bit too much faith in the youngsters to be the backup in that season.
Yeah.
You know, we know that likes of Diarra and Kieran Phillips ended up playing. And I think, to be honest, I think that sort of did a little bit of harm to those players' reputations. And I think people would probably be a bit more excited about this crop that was coming through now if half of them hadn't had to play as emergency cover 2-3 years ago. But yeah, I think it is genuinely, I think you look at it now, particularly I think this is the big benefit of Warnock is I was looking at that squad before we knew it was Warnock and we were thinking it was going to be someone else, and you think, oh, they need players in this area, this area, this area. Is this player ready? I'm not sure. And suddenly you look at it with Warnock in charge and you think, oh, actually, I have less doubts about Rahmani Edmonds-Green now. Mm. I have less doubts about Ben Jackson now. I think there's a few players, Sorba Thomas as well, and Josh Cromer, I think, are big ones as well. Players who you look at and you think, now that you know Warnock is in charge, and you think, oh, actually, yeah, they're going to be absolutely fine. So that's the big benefit, I think.
That is why Town had to say yes to Neil Warnock. And like, I'm not sort of criticising them for that at all, because I'm with you there. You look at that squad now and you think, okay, they do need less. And let's be honest, I think when a new owner comes in, you have two different types of fan. There's the fan who goes, new owner, loads of money, let's just spend loads of money on the first team squad. Let's just get loads of first team players in and have a proper go. And then there's the other fan who goes, new owners coming in, loads of money, let's just spend loads of money on the club and plug some holes and sort various things out. And I think with Neil Warnock, you get more of a chance to sort things out club-wise,
yeah,
than just having to plough money into your first team squad. And, you know, if that's the case and we've got a year where we get announcements about the stadium and we can see things at the academy progressing and, you know, some of the roles that have been trimmed back are being expanded again and various other things, I don't think me or you have any problem with that whatsoever.
No, that's exactly it.
It's just you're going to have to be patient on the pitch if it's a fairly predictable mid-table season. But me and you would advocate having a fairly predictable mid-table season anyway. There's just ways you can do it, isn't there? That's the thing. What you really want with a mid-table season is where you're nice and comfortable, you don't really flirt with relegation. For a month or 6 weeks or so, you look like we're sitting here asking the question, could they just get into the playoffs? But then ultimately you just sort of sit nice and comfortable in that, I don't know, 10th position, something like that. That's the kind of season that it would be great to see them have, really. But I keep coming back to the same thing. My only thing is, I just think it's going to be a really competitive league this season. Really competitive, yeah. So we'll see.
I think the only reason I have sort of any doubts about the approach is just because there's those question marks. And as you say, we know that, for instance, the stadium needs, what is it, something like 10 to 15 million pounds worth of improvements made to
equipment.
It, just in terms of the plant, yeah, you know, the generators that power the stadium, things, boring stuff like that, needs money spending on it. And Kevin Nagle did tweet to a fan the other day that they are under some financial restrictions for the first year. I'd be interested to know what those restrictions are, because if it is something like we need to put 10 million pounds into the stadium, or we need to pay off this, because we haven't had the accounts, by the way, for 2021-22, so there might be something, and I'm not saying there is, but if there's something in those accounts that takes us by surprise that might need financing immediately, or who knows?
I would imagine, you know more than this than me, so I'm asking you the question, I'm not making a statement here, Steve. I would imagine if he's bought the club, the EFL have said that he's got to clear a level of debt. I know Town's debts weren't massive, but he's probably got to clear a level of debt, and he's had to prove funding, and he's probably had to prove what a section of that funding for, and you're talking about stuff like the stadium. Do you think that's the kind of financial constraints he's on? What you can't do is tell the EFL you're going to do A, B, C and D, and then just sack that completely off and do something completely different. Do you think that's more in line?
Yeah, they'll have had to make a 3-year business plan to get approved by the EFL, so they will know where that money is going to go. As you say, it could well be that they are we'll need to see how much debt Dean Hoyle is writing off, for instance, or how much needs to be paid for out of Kevin Nagle's pocket, because, you know, he might have a number in his head where a number that he's willing to go up to, and if a chunk of that is going on paying off debt or paying off stadium or whatever it might be, then it will inevitably impact on the wage budget, the transfer budget. And I think that you want to, if that is the case, anything like that, and again, I can't stress enough how speculative that is, I think probably the accounts for 2021-22 will provide some clarity on that, and you should have those accounts in the next week or so. I think it is the right move to pull the band-aid off now rather than have that sitting around for for years. I think having Warnock puts them in a unique position to do it now when feel like they're fairly secure in doing it.
And that's the thing. It's not I only have questions over the future in a progressive sense, and that's why I don't particularly like the Warnock decision. But I completely understand it, you know, and as I keep saying, if that's what happens over this year, if you buy yourself a year on the pitch to have a year sorting everything out off the pitch, absolutely fine. But then what you want to see next year is the benefit of that 12 months, isn't it? We don't want to be, me and you can't sit here, we joked about it off air, but me and you can't sit here having this same podcast next year talking about the stadium and various other things. You know, there are things that need some progress and need sorting, really. And if that's what Warnock buys, then brilliant. But yeah, you know, the to-do list, we don't know exactly what's on the to-do list, but we both know the to-do list will be pretty big, won't it, generally speaking. So let's see what they get ticked off it.
Yeah.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
Transfers will be the next one that everyone wants. We're still waiting for news on Josh Coroma and his contract. And then it's, you know, incomings and outgoings. We've not really had anything of either other than what we've seen on the retained list. I think this, unlike the past couple of years, I think even the retained list, if they were to keep Coroma now, I think no one would particularly have any major objections to the players that are going. There's no one been sold yet. We'll see what happens. It feels like Lee Nichols is the big one. Because I'm not sure after what happened with Sorba Thomas at Blackburn, and I question how much Premier League interest there would be in him, as I think we've discussed before. But half the Premier League needs a goalkeeper.
Yeah,
and he's going to be on several lists.
But also, I think even if you count Sorba Thomas, I think Town probably need at least one more good wide attacking player.
Yes.
So I think if you get rid of Sorba, I think that's two, and they are difficult and expensive positions to sort. Yeah. So I do just wonder if they think with Sorba, working with Warnock might actually be worth, you know, sitting down and trying to persuade him. And I would advocate that as well, to be honest. You know, me and you didn't particularly want him to go, but completely understood him going. It's been a while since we podded, isn't it? We understood him going, but he's a player who you think under Warnock could actually, he might be one who really thrives in a sort of...
If he gets the Coroma treatment.
Yeah, yeah. So
I'm hopeful on Silva because I think he comes into this summer really with something to prove, because...
Yeah.
Obviously, he wasn't happy with how things ended at Town under Fotheringham. It's clear that those two didn't get on. And then Blackburn, it was a similar story. He ended up losing his place, and John Dole Thomason was criticising him. Not, you know, massively, but hinting that maybe the level wasn't there in training. And he subsequently lost his place in the Wales squad, which, knowing Sorba a little bit, will have hurt him a lot. So I think he really will come in full of beans this summer, and I think that is going to be a good thing for Town.
Yeah. The other thing I would say is it was really, really sad to see Danny Ward go. Really, really sad. Really, really sad. And then it was great to see him come back. Yay! No, I think Wardy was one we talked about, I think, on that Andy Takes That Chance pod, and I think the pod we did at the end of the season, we both said if you could get him on the right money to stay at that club, not necessarily as your number one striker, but as an option in that squad. And I think even more so working under Warnock, who, you know, I think Warnock takes him to bed on a night and cuddles him like a teddy. I think, yeah, it just made all the sense in the world, didn't it, to try and get that deal done. I was quite surprised it was for 2 years, but also, you know, if it's the right money again... Me and you both know how difficult strikers are to recruit, particularly for the Championship. Why not? You know, you've got somebody who you know exactly what you're going to get from them, which is maximum effort, if nothing else. So,
I think if you need to, you need to sign Danny Ward to 2 years to get him to stay for one, then
it's worth doing, isn't it?
Maybe it's worth doing. And particularly, you know, year two's wages aren't necessarily going to be the same as year one's either.
No.
So,
and also, we know anecdotally he's very, very happy in the area. He doesn't particularly want to leave. You know, he's building a house. I think his family are building a business, etc. You can slightly leverage that without wanting to sound mean or, you know, I don't mean that in a bad way. He doesn't want to leave. Town need that position. Town are better with Danny Ward in that first team squad. So it was good to just see an agreement reached. As for the Caroma one, I think anybody who listens to that pod knows my views on Caroma. I think it's, for me, it's whether he's expensive or not. That's genuinely what it comes down to, because I think Josh Caroma at his best is up there with the top, genuinely the top 5% in that league. You know, and I truly mean that. He was, that game against Sheffield United, for an hour of that game, he was not far off unplayable.
Watford as well, I know you weren't at that game. That
no,
Watford
but
game
I watched
is,
it, yeah.
He played at centre forward, and that's one of the best centre forward performances I've seen in the town shirt in my 4 years covering the club full time.
But what I would say is there's another Josh Caroma, so it just, I don't know. I'm a bit torn on that. I would say go back and listen to the Takes Your Chance podcast. But if you do that and you're a loyal listener to our pod, go back and listen to one of our old ones twice to make up for it.
I think that's another one where having Warnock in, I think,
yeah,
makes it easier to re-sign him, because you know that at least you're going to get a year of good, yeah, Josh Caroma, you would hope. And I think, let's be honest, if you get a year of good Josh Caroma, you sell him next summer, don't you? Because he'll be worth 10 million quid to someone at that point.
Yeah, you'd hope so. But the other thing is, if you sign Ward, you sign Caroma, there's been a lot of talk about strikers and Warnock wanting to bring another striker in. You've got, I know Josh Caroma tends to play on the left or tends to play wide, but can play through the middle. He's got Wardy to, as I said, he's got his teddy bear to play through the middle in those games where he wants somebody just to be a pest and a harass. It does give him less of a problem to solve in that position. And it is, as we know, perhaps the most expensive position to recruit for and get some quality. And I think when you look at the others there, I don't think Tyrese Simpson is near for me. No. You know, Warnock may love him, but he doesn't look championship ready to me, to the point where I'd almost be considering getting him some football this season in League One, maybe. I think in terms of everybody else, Kean Herrett I think is a good option, but is he ready to sort of play even 25 championship games? I'm not so sure about that, Steve. I think maybe you keep around that squad till January, and then you have a decision to make, don't you, whether, you know, what happens in the longer term there. I don't think Kieran Phillips is anywhere near. I think he's a very nice footballer to watch and a very good footballer to watch, but the Championship is a bear pit of a league.
It's fitness and robustness for him. Yeah. His goal scoring record is really good when you look at his last couple of loan spells. Particularly playing for a not very good Morecambe team. I know he had a dry spell in the middle of his spell at Morecambe last year, but even when I went, when he was in the middle of that dry spell and everyone was going, yeah, but no one cares because he's doing so much off the ball. And then he got back into goal scoring form. He was nominated for Player of the Month in January, even though he got injured in early January because he was that good early in the month. But yeah, it's fitness for him. And there's a couple like that. Pat Jones as well is another centre forward option who you could say that about, plays on the wing primarily but can play it up.
Pat Jones is, like, I mean, we've seen him in the B team quite a bit. He's just an insanely talented player, but he needs his body to stand up to like 10 games in the Championship, doesn't he? It's not even five at this point. And so going back to the original point, I think if you've got Caroma and Danny Ward as options through the middle, I think that makes your squad building or how you're looking at this summer, I think it does change the complexion and puts a striker from, we need to get a first team striker in who's going to play 38 games this season and guarantee us 15 plus goals, to we need a third option, you know, somebody else. So I completely see the sense in it. It's just,
it's interesting that we're not talking about Jordan Rhodes here, isn't it?
Well, I think it's quite clear that Warnock just doesn't. Yeah. It's the thing Warnock wants from a striker is the opposite of what Jordan Rhodes is.
Yeah,
you know, Jordan's qualities are getting on the end of things, aren't they? Not being a pest, not making things happen on his own. not spending 90 minutes bullying somebody because it gives somebody else space in the game. And that's just Warnock ball, isn't it? You know, there's it's not Rhodes' fault. I think he's been linked with a few clubs, and it just makes sense, doesn't it, that he probably moves on this summer.
Yeah, yeah. Hopefully we'll get some movement on the transfer front now. I think that was always going to... If they could possibly wait until the takeover was done, I think they were always going to, weren't they? Mm-hmm. Let's be honest. So now that's done, hopefully we'll see some movement in the coming days with new faces. But from what Neil Warnock said, I think we're not expecting loads. Probably sort of 1, 2, 3 new signings plus replacements for anyone who leaves.
Not to tie you down... But position-wise, where do you think they'll go for?
Well, he said that they're after a striker. And I don't think that is just, as we've discussed, I don't think that is just, oh, what if Wardy leaves? Yeah. I think they need a winger, as you've touched on. And then if I had to do one more, I think I'd be tempted to go right back. Just because they only have Brody Spencer that's fit, who's an out-and-out right-back at the moment. I know you can play Matty Pearson there. You could play Ben Jackson there, to be fair, because he is genuinely two-footed. Sorba could play as a wing-back. Mm-hmm. But Turton's going to miss the start of the season. And I think that's an important role. I would strongly advocate they need a midfielder if they can get one. But if I had to pick between that and a right-back, I think the right-back is the more pressing need. Would you go the other way?
I think the striker chase is out there, but I think the profile of the striker, as we've just discussed, changes a little bit. I think they definitely need another wide option, because I think it's quite clear that there's certainly a way that Warnock would like to play that they can't with the options at the club at the moment. So that's got to be done.
Well, it's currently Sorba Thomas, maybe Josh Caroma, Aaron Rowe, Conor Mahoney, and Pat Jones, who has discussed. Can't really count on his fitness at this stage. So
they've got to go with one wide option. I mean, arguably, you could advocate that they need to. You know, maybe you're looking at someone you can sign and someone you can bring in on a loan. But I do think that passing eight in midfield, I do think that sort of that link, really. Because I think as you look at Radoni now, Radoni, Rudders, the Rudman, I think he's got a different role under Warnock. And I think one of the things that Warnock likes about him is that he can use him in different roles and get a different tune out of him in different roles. So I think they are a central midfielder short. And what I mean by central midfielder is a proper eight, not someone who's half a six or half a ten. I mean a proper passing, link man, good on a dead ball type player. But again, maybe you look, try and loan someone. I don't know the right back thing,
for a third spell.
Well, yeah. But it's that type of player who in certain situations where you need somebody who can thread a ball through the lines, and at the moment there's nobody in that midfield who can really do it. And sort of Jack Radoni, Paul Rudd, Rudders, the Rudman, the Rudmeister General, he is kind of evolved into a player who wants to get on the end of that rather than play that ball. So yeah, I do think they kind of need to look at that. The right back is less of a concern for me because I think they do have options to get through. And I think once Turton's back, I think Turton is your right back.
It just depends. We've always
really liked Turton, and you know when him coming back is a massive boost, isn't it? So
I know ACLs can be different. If he's back in October, then I revise my opinion. But if he's out for a year and he's only going to be back in February, he's missing most of the season.
But
I think going out wide, you could continue with Headley or Jackson there, as Warnock did last year on the left, I suppose.
But I don't seriously think you get 35 games from either of them. That's my issue. Yeah. Not without having to accept that they're going to have like at least two spells in the season where they just look out of it because they've got to sort of evolve their game a little bit. They're young players.
I think you're also relying there on Yuta Nakayama coming back and being brilliant off the bat, which is no means a guarantee after a long layoff. And also, by the way, he looks like he's been in the weights, doesn't he? I don't think he's seen any pictures of him lately. His upper body is massive, but in a good way. But also, and you don't want to bring this up because it's horrible, but the recursion rate for an Achilles injury is higher than pretty much any other injury. So, you know, you don't want to leave yourself short on left back again by relying on Headley and Jackson to be wingers. So,
the other big one as well, like we sort of, we kind of skipped over it earlier, was, but it is the question mark over Lee Nichols, isn't it?
Yeah.
You just, you don't know if they are going to get offers for him. And if, the thing is, like, there are, I have spoke about goalkeepers, you know, and I do think goalkeeper is a position you can recruit for easier than, say, a striker. But at the same time, he's the best goalkeeper in that league, isn't he?
Yeah, exactly. So I think sorry to, yeah, you're right. And I think if Nichols were to go, they'd have to get a hefty fee for him, and you'd think they'd be able to replace him for that. Mm. But yeah, it wouldn't be ideal. I think ideally you keep him, but I think business wise, there's probably a case that you're going to sell someone. He's the most valuable, and probably the one you can most easily replace, and the one you can most afford to lose. So yeah, we'll see. Sorry, before we move on, the wide positions, I'm not forgetting, I've got them at number 10 on my board here, which I'm referring to. Dwayne Holmes and Brahima Diarra are options as well.
Yeah.
But again, you're losing them as midfield options there.
Yeah, I think Brahima is just an absolute, I mean, I love him. He's just essentially his tactical position is to go on the pitch and be a bag of wasps. That's his basic role in that side, and I think he's great. But
his defensive, I looked at it recently, and I don't think we talked about it on the podcast, his defensive stats are absolutely through the roof for a player of his position.
But I think with Dwayne Holmes brings a certain, how can I put it? He brings a certain thing to the side, but that's about it. You know, I think everything we've seen from Dwayne Holmes is pretty much everything he's got, really. So I think there are certain games, certain positions, certain opposition, and certain opposition players, importantly, that you play Dwayne Holmes against, because you know he'll do a man-to-man job for you, you know, or he'll sit deeper and protect that side, or he'll come inside and make up an extra man in midfield if you want. But I think what we're talking about is that wide player who is essentially like Sorba Thomas at his best, who actually plays wide and can deliver crosses in. Because part of the problem with Sorba's sort of decline in his form is that he was the only one Town had. So as soon as they sort of doubled up on him, and in some cases, in some games, even trebled up on him, Town kind of had nothing else, nothing left, you know, because you weren't getting anything like from the other side. So you've kind of got to balance it to ask different questions in that opposition defence, haven't you? And that's the profile of player we're talking about. Dwayne should be fit early on in the season, shouldn't he?
Yeah, I think you're looking at, if he's not back for the start of the season, then not long after is the impression I get. But obviously, I've not checked in on that for a while, so I'll ask again in pre-season. But yeah.
Yeah. Well, he's a good squad option. But is he sort of a 40-game first-team player for me at this point? I think it depends on your level of ambition, shall we say.
He always ends up on the bench, doesn't he? He has a good spell, and then he ends up back on the bench for a spell, and then he does well off the bench, and then he comes back into the team, and then he ends up on the bench again.
I think we talked about this before. You've got to know the exact moment to pull him out the side, haven't you?
Yeah.
You've got to judge that moment, because he will go on a... He will have that sort of three-game run where he's pretty anonymous.
Yeah, plenty to talk about, and plenty to... I'm sorry if this was a bit more grounded in reality than you might otherwise have expected, but I think there are sort of lots of question marks still ahead of the new season, and there may well be answers to all of those things. You know, none of the things I think we've mentioned here, Dave, are things where it's like, oh no, this is a massive red flag, the club's knackered for the next 5 years. They literally are just, these are questions we would like to see answered, and they may well be answered, and that's fine.
Yeah, and I mean, you've got a press conference with Kevin Nagel Tuesday, and I'm sure, listen, transfer-wise, I'm sure there has also been a little bit of a move to try and keep your powder dry so that you've got some PR wins under the new owner and the new manager, which is it's how football and how public relations work. So we completely understand that as well. But also got the fixture list, haven't we? Which is exciting.
We have.
Can I just have a slight rant? If you're one of those whoppers who, when the fixture list comes out, tweets, "Oh, look, we got fixtures. We got to play everybody twice. I can't believe it." Just do me a favour and just go and look at yourself in a mirror and take a good, hard, long look at that for 20 minutes. Fixture lists are exciting. It's where you can start to like plan and plot. I bet you're the sort of person who, when the presents went under your Christmas tree, you went, "Oh, don't worry, don't touch them. You'll be able to have a look at them on Christmas morning." No, be excited. Fixture lists are good. Dream. Live a little.
Oh, it's only what's on my Amazon wish list anyway. Yeah, it sort of takes a little bit of the fun out of going on that pre-season trip, which I'll be off to in a couple of weeks. The fact that we got to go back to Plymouth again 2 weeks later. But in other circumstances, that would have been the exact game I wanted as the opening game. Nice hot August day on the south coast. Leicester is, we've got Middlesbrough will be the first home game of the Nagel regime in the Carabao Cup. The most boring possible Carabao Cup game. My wife wanted an away trip to Wrexham because she's been watching the documentary. Mm-hmm. And then first home league game, Leicester, which is an interesting one. We've never seemed to get an easy home. Haven't we had a newly relegated team as the first home game for the last 3 years now?
It's then moving on to Norwich. We don't know what condition they're going to be in, but you know, you suspect they're going to be reasonably strong. Then is it West Brom after that? Again, we don't know what condition they'll be in. It's a tough start, but I think like it's quite a good yardstick, isn't it, for where Town are going to be the first five games, I'd say. I think after that we're really going to have a sort of idea of what kind of season we've got coming up, really. But then what's quite nice is I think that's quite a tough start, but after that,
yeah, away to Middlesbrough in there as well in the middle of that.
I think if you were looking at, I mean, we don't do gambling and betting stuff on this pod, and we're both actually against that kind of thing. But I think if you were looking at win percentages and gambling odds, I think then as you look over the rest of the season, there's no other sort of run of four or five games that looks absolutely terrifying. You know, they might have two in a row, but they've got quite a nice even rest of the season, really.
Yeah, I think just in general there's a bit of it. I mean, it'll change, we'll know after 10 games like whether this changes or not, but just on paper looking at it, there isn't like a massive nightmare run where they've got all three newly relegated teams plus Coventry and Middlesbrough. They've got a five game run that repeats itself in November and then again in like February, where it's Leeds, Watford, Hull, Southampton, Sunderland. And I think the Christmas fixtures are probably up there as the hardest in the division, to be honest. It's Millwall away, Norwich away, Blackburn, Borough, Leicester.
They're home on Boxing Day, aren't they?
Yeah, home on the 29th.
I genuinely, hand on heart, I do think it's one fixture where having a home advantage actually makes a huge difference. I think the home and away thing is shrinking as time goes by, but I do think Boxing Day it makes a difference. I think finishing with two games at home as well is quite reasonably handy.
Before going away to Ipswich on the final day.
Going away to Ipswich on the final day, as you say, which you'd kind of hope that game's a dead rubber one way or another. You know, you'd kind of hope possibly all three of those are. But
I'm still yet to cover a Town game on the final day that's actually meant anything.
Yeah.
Unless you count the regular season anyway.
So I think, like, pouring over, Steve knows my views on this. The minute the fixtures are out, the new season begins, and it's exciting. I love fixture release day. And I think pouring over the possibilities is just human nature. And I think that when I looked at the fixtures last season, I remember looking in the summer, and I remember looking, I think there was three runs that looked horrible, absolutely horrible. Whereas this time, as I said, I think the first month and a bit is tough, and then we'll see where we end up. You know, if they can get through that first month and a bit and they're in an all right position, I think they'll be absolutely fine. over the course of the season. Absolutely fine.
It's kind of meaningless as well anyway. It's fun to look at these things, I agree. But, you know, last season Town's record against the top three was exactly the same as their record against the bottom three. Won one, draw one, lost the rest. And, you know, they had that nightmare run last season was the last 10 games, and that was their only good run of form in the whole season. They only lost one of them. So, you know, it's what you make of it. And as Warnock said, he wants Town to be the team that no one else wants to face. And I think that's a good yardstick for Town for the season ahead, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. But yeah, I think overall, I think we've been slightly down a beat on this podcast than some others have been listening to them. But I think that's fair enough, because we're only trying to be analytical. And I think that it's now time we're going to get some stuff to get our teeth into, isn't it? I think the Nagel press conference will be interesting. I think the next 3 weeks will be interesting in terms of what happens transfer wise, and we'll get a good idea if there's going to be some outs as well as ins. So, yeah, sort of bring it on now. I'm unfortunately, Steve, as you know, I'm just a football junkie. So I always, when the season ends, it's always like, oh, good, we can have a little break. And then after 2 weeks, I'm just sort of staring at walls and wondering what the meaning of life is.
I did. I realised that I was ready for it when I looked at the B team fixtures and thought, oh, I can't wait to get to a couple of them.
Yeah, well,
B team friendlies.
That's precisely it. And having a daughter who's now football mad, she's the home friendly against, is it Heerenveen they're playing?
Heerenveen, yeah.
Yeah. She was like, oh, we'll definitely be going to that, won't we, Dad? And it's like, oh, right, okay. Yeah, I guess we are then. So yeah, it's all exciting from here, you know. I just really want this season to feel different for Town fans. I think they had a lousy season last season. I think the season before was great, but ended with a real hammer blow of a summer, really, in a few different ways. It would be nice just to sort of have a steady season of progress without reaching too far to something that's not sustainable. And then really giving themselves a platform next summer to get the right manager in and build that squad and actually sort of be on a really firm footing. I said it on the Andy Takes That Chance podcast, but they've really got to get themselves to the point where they're not plugging holes in the squad, they're sort of improving it from transfer window to transfer window. And that's my sort of main wish for this next year.
There we go. Magic, what is your, and we are going to change it, media recommendation, Dave? So TV, film, music, books, podcasts, whatever you want.
I've got two things to recommend, actually, Steve. There is a website out there called YouTube, okay? Mm-hmm. It's quite popular, a lot of stuff on there. But ages ago, I recommended Fatboy Slim's 27-minute remix of You've Come a Long Way, Baby, where he basically remixed a lot of the records into their original samples, and it's just a great mix, but it dropped off BBC Sounds. He's now bunged it up on YouTube, and it's just a splendid way to spend half an hour, Steve. And of the 8,000 list views now, I think I'm responsible for about 7,500 of them. But also, Fred again set from Glastonbury last night. We're recording this on the Saturday. He was on the Friday night. If you can get it on Tide Player, Steve. It was, it was a brilliant hour. Absolutely brilliant hour. Didn't know much of his work before this, it would be fair to say. But we'll be listening to nothing else on Spotify over the next week, I strongly suspect.
Lovely. I'm going to recommend the TV show Halt and Catch Fire, which is now on. You might see me banging on about this on Twitter. It's the best TV show that no one watched, is the way that everyone describes it. It's all on All Four now, so you can watch it for free. It's an American TV series, sort of 10 episodes per season, 4 seasons of it. And it starts in the 1980s with and going through the tech revolution and the introduction of PCs to the home marketplace, and the creation of a computer to enter that marketplace and the cutthroat tactics involved. And it sort of feels like a Mad Men ripoff, but set in the 80s in the first season. And then as it goes on, it evolves into very much its own thing and is an absolute delight by the end. So, yeah, Halt and Catch Fire, that's called.
Good. Is that what we're doing now then? Are we doing media recommendations?
If you want,
just
yeah.
Just so I can prepare myself.
Yeah, it saves me looking at music every time.
Going to be a whole lot of comic books coming up.
Yeah. Brilliant. Thanks, Dave, and thank you for listening. And we will see you next time on Who to Be a Terrier. Goodbye.
Can the season start tomorrow?
Oh, God, if only. I'm already running out of stuff to write.